Balance and harmony to you and welcome. You are inside the inner chamber at Pharaoh's house. This episode is made possible from donorships by Holistic Living Ministry, the original people's ministry that teaches you the ancient ways of holistic living through respect of self, family, earth, and creator. Visit them online at holisticlivingministry.org and be certain to inquire about becoming a member of the ministry. The spiritual and physical evolution begins with you. And be sure to visit my holistic therapy shop at pharaohshouse.com to purchase your own portable water filtration systems. Use these systems daily or during emergencies. These water filters can make even dirty puddle water drinkable in an emergency. Make sure your emergency preparation plan includes a long-lasting portable water filtration system that requires no electricity, removes arsenic, cysts, pathogens, and fluoride, among other toxins. Go to www.pharaohshouse.com. In this first topic, parasitism, or parasites, getting from downtown to uptown and back again. You heard of the word parasites, or parasite, and parasitism, often and usually in a general sense. There are thousands, if not more, types of parasites that you see listed in your biology books. And they range in sizes, forms, and function, and they all have their own objectives. For some, their goal is to consume the host entirely. For others, the purpose is to eat what the host eats, and then to breed. These types often infect the bowels or gastrointestinal region of a host so that their young can be expelled during defecation or urination. They make their way back to a host through what the host eats or a variety of other ways. Sometimes they use a host as a vehicle in order to get to a target host. We see this often in predator-prey relationships. The prey has to get devoured by a predator, which is usually the intended target, or at least another vehicle in a cycle or chain. In the supposed food chain, parasites often position themselves as the alphas, if you will, or at the top of the food chain, or what some call food pyramid. So in other words, with parasites at the top, the food pyramid becomes used as a weapon against all life forms. When a parasite is removed from the cycle, or evolution of some species, it is surmised in science, at least theoretically, that the species would lose its need for duality in reproduction, returning to an asexual reproductive state. Hence the parasite supposedly, in that instance, would be responsible for sexually dimorphic reproductive traits. Genetic materials of the parasite would not pass from host to host, and the parasite itself would either have to adapt or die. But if sustenance and propagation only occurred in diversity, for a particular parasite, then it would require diversity in the hosts it chooses. In other words, there would be over-competition for resources, as well as the potential for overthrow by more virulent parasites. If this is all starting to sound like environmental sciences, sociology, and maybe even cultural anthropology, then yes, it should. In ecology, parasites are responsible for much of the diversity we see biologically, as well as for much of the deformation and deterioration in species, not to mention subsequent extinction in species that had outlived their requirements as hosts. Keep in mind my mirror effect tenet that states there is more than just a duality, or more when it comes to symmetry and function in what is called life. For example, in anatomical symmetry, we see a balance of either two or three, as in objects that appear to come in two. They have a third or a fourth. Before we go off on a tangent, let's get back to parasites. They exist in both the physical and the so-called metaphysical, as in the parasites we can see, whether with our two naked eyes or microscopes. They have relatives that we do not see, or at least can only see with our third or first eye. These are the parasites that sit at the top of their own pyramid system, or a pyramid system in which we exist. Think of a food chain or cycle with the variety of creatures performing their specific functions at different levels. They exist in a cycle which has a slow evolutionary rate in most instances for the purposes of ensuring their own propagation, sustenance, and evolution. To get to the next stage, they must do so through a specific host over a particular period. Depending on that period, some might consider this mutualism because the host is not outrightly consumed. But regardless of the longevity factor, the host, in most instances, has its lifespan shortened. In other instances, the quasi-mutualistic relationship can be extended so that the host provides a conduit to either the next stage in the parasite's evolution or lifespan, or so that the host can provide a gateway to the actual intended targeted host, which can be a different species altogether. Now, here are some side notes on parasites. The word parasite has origins in French, Latin, and Greek. Part of the word in its early formation referred to grain, and specifically wheat, as in sitos. By the way, corn is a generic term for grains, and grain is used in biotech research for many purposes, such as a conduit substance, in order to pass chemicals as well as microorganisms to a host species. As mentioned earlier, host species mutate and become something other than their original sources during instances where particular parasites require diversity in their host population. Yes, I said their host population, using their to imply the possessive. And now for the next topic. In the Company of Mr. and Mrs. Death, an allegory by yours truly. What comes to thought when you think of death, or hear the word death? Whether in English or your own native language, what is the meaning of the word, as it is or has been taught to you? Has that meaning changed for you over time? What if I said that there is a cycle, or a death cycle, in the sense that it is part of a culture and a cycle which, like my previous topic, requires participants to be both victim and victimizer? Let us examine popular food systems. By popular, I mean that which has been made the norm through cultivation, adulteration, etc., whether processed and packaged or otherwise. The victimizer requires you to do various things prior to consuming the product which has come through their hands. Once you have completed those tasks, then you receive your reward, the food, if you will. In the natural world, or is that nature world, you learn and you participate in order to maintain balance within and without. There is no clutter nor distraction that keeps you from your intended learning. In Mr. and Mrs. Death's system, however, learning in balance is not the objective, at least not a natural holistic balance. In fact, what you learn is simply rote memory behavior, which you are to show to your offspring if you have some, in which case your offspring behave in kind, creating more victims. You become the expendable supply of hosts whose activities help fashion more deterioration in everything you think and do. From the materials you purchase to the act of generating energy into currency to the waste products generated from the items you consumed. Each step helps create the unnatural cycle which maintains the life cycle of Mr. and Mrs. Death. Do they have faces, this ubiquitous pair? In a way, they take on the faces of the horde of humanity when humanity participates as workers, passive observers, uniformed military, and the like. When humanity becomes both the fake authority and the willing follower, they appear to be the logos for Mr. and Mrs. Death Corporation, a multinational conglomerate, by the way, with satellite offices covering nearly every square inch of this realm. The incentives offered by this megacorp are, on the surface, enjoyable and temporarily rewarding. The penalties, however, for not abiding by corporate policy can be at least, on the surface, intimidating. There is no actual salary for humanity. The willing and unwilling employees, also known as human resources, they get nothing, basically. Mind you, humanity is not all the same in many senses. Some forms of humanity find their origins within the laboratories of Mr. and Mrs. Death Corporation. Some know this, while others have no clue. But regardless of self-knowledge, their function still serves the same initiative. The corporation has two primary policy rules that all employees must abide by, and those rules are trauma equals life and life equals fear. One must be introduced to both trauma and fear as soon as possible, as stated in the orientation manual. Or is that disorientation manual? To be an employee, one must give up a true knowledge of self, and that includes knowledge of time and space, such as the various calendar systems that indicate how to holistically thrive in the physical and spiritual based on timing, placement, and balance. So, just how old is this corporation, and when was it founded? There are many theories, tales, and of course those engendering historical records, but I prefer to go by the words written in their prospectus, which claims the company has an ongoing restructuring policy which allows it to manifest itself or inject itself into a timeline for the purposes of corrupting natural course of events and creating its own pseudo-calendar system to serve its own multi-purpose agendas. And by the way, though there are many agendas for the company, they all have the same outcome, death, or as it states in their mission statement, in the fine print that is, subjugation, cyclic deterioration, encroachment, displacement, and disorientation of all human and human-like resources. What are some of the benefits to working for Mr. and Mrs. Death Corporation? You can work from home. You get to lose yourself in any one of a thousand delusions based, of course, upon pre-selected timelines, scenarios, and purposes, just as long as you expire accordingly and react accordingly. And who is or are the board of this multinational corporation of death? Well, that and how one can get fired or resign from this company successfully as well as intact without residual effects in my next podisode. I'll see you in the cafeteria. Now for your email. The first email is from Anonymous. Greetings, Pharaoh. What are some of the ways to help remember dreams? Greetings to you. Here are a few ways that I have detailed in past podisodes on how to not only recall dreams but also access the guiding messages as well as create the worlds you must access now and later in dreams. First, check your eating. If you are eating too late in the day, then curtail that. Lower your carbohydrate intake and then end it at least 4 to 5 hours before retiring. Sleep in total darkness. Use no pillows when sleeping unless you are dealing with an injury and your health care provider has recommended you do so. Remove electronics from your sleeping area. Do not use an alarm clock, a digital alarm clock, and if you do, make sure it is analog. Drink teas 2 hours to 1 hour before sleeping that help induce dreaming, like neem leaf or rosemary, parsley, or go-to cola. Keep a journal of your dreams and take note of colors, symbols first, and then when you have become accustomed to those, then actions and venues. Keep in mind that symbols can be shown in dreams as well as spoken in dream language. Symbols include numbers, letters, patterns, etc. Use a technique of instant waking, this is what I call it. That is where you awaken yourself when you realize you're about to lapse into that sleep realm. Do this no more than twice a night. By the fourth or fifth night, you notice your quirks and patterns. This is the doorway, and this is where you begin to realize yourself as the dreamer and participant. In time, you begin to know your dream self as creator, dreamer, and active participant. Next email is from Didier. Didier lives in Lyon, France, and writes, Pharaoh, I have been a listener of your podcasts for a year, and I thank you for your wise teachings. I want to know if you also teach in person, as we would love to have you here in France to teach what you know. Thank you and appreciation. I appreciate you, Didier, and do continue to visit the site. I do not teach in person, but when I make a house call, for example, there is a little teaching and learning in everything that I do. Showing someone who has sincerely sought me how to prepare a balanced holistic meal is a way of teaching, as is demonstrating how to remove unseen parasitic activity from a house. But remember, as I always say, teaching and learning are intertwined. We must learn and teach no matter what we do. Coming to France to meet you and others who want to meet me would be an honor. Thank you, DDA, for your email. Do you have a question, suggestion, or topic idea? Share them. And do write me at know@pharaohshouse.com. That's know@pharaohshouse.com. Now the answer to that name that plant quiz on my Facebook page. The answer is radish, R-A-D-D-I-S-H. And there are a variety of radish plants. They are related and it is the root that most people eat. Even though the plant is entirely edible, they still eat the root. Radishes grow in Asia, Europe, and the Americas, as well as on the African continent in climates that are not too harsh or hot. Popular types include the Japanese daikon or daikon, and of course that ever popular cherry red round shaped radish that is eaten in salads. Why did I mention that I would not recommend eating radishes? Well, because there are many hybrids out there, and that this plant is better off replenishing your soil than it is being put into your body. Like edible mushrooms, there are certain edible plants that are much better off uneaten, as they help to balance soil nutrients. Radishes can also be used as a temporary medicine, in that you would eat the plant only in times of disease, where a radish can play a major role in your healing regimen. Now for my holistic health tips for this podisode. Here are some tips for gardeners. Last year, around the same time, in one of my podisodes, I taught you about companion plants that act as parasitic and opportunistic insect repellents for other plants as well as you. There are also herbs and essential oils that you can use to assist you and also your companion plants as guardians. Here's an updated list. Take some notes. Citronella, both the plant and the pure oil, is the most common natural mosquito repellent. The plant is the strongest of all, even stronger than the oil. Citronella is a grass. It can be grown within the ground or a pot. It's fairly low maintenance, and that hardier varieties grow in areas where it is cooler, such as the Citronella winterianus. Cipopogon nardus is the original form of citronella, and it is very strong, but it prefers temperate zones. Catnip is also a natural mosquito repellent, and it's easy to grow. It's related to mint. It deters insects when they are close by. You can also crush it up and apply it to your skin for extra protection when you're gardening or hiking. Lemongrass, with its distinctively strong smell, is kind to your nose, but insects do not like it. It makes a great companion plant, and the essential oil can be sprayed inside your home as well. The following herbs: mint, basil, rosemary, sage, and thyme, that's T-H-Y-M-E, not only are edible, but they also are the perfect garden guardians when they're planted near fruiting plants, like tomatoes. They keep flies, mosquitoes, and beetles at a distance. There's also horse mint. It's also a strong plant like citronella, with one extra added bonus. You can make it into an herbal tea for calming nerves and settling an upset stomach. There's marigolds, and they contain something called pyrethrum, which is used in commercial insect repellents. Marigold seeds are cheap, but even still, always find out if they are heirloom seeds and not hybrids. These decorative yellow petal flowering plants are also the greatest way to attract pollinating creatures like bees into your garden, as well as repelling mosquitoes and insects that attack your tomato plants. Tomatoes and marigolds make the perfect companions in your garden, along with lemongrass. Finally, tansies. They're another flowering plant whose petals emit an odor that insects find repulsive. And then there's arboretum. This serves as a brilliant flowering plant in your garden, even though it's low to the ground. It secretes something called coumarin, and coumarin is also found in commercial insect sprays, just like the pyrethrum in the marigolds. The arboretum comes in the following colors: blue, violet, pink, and white. It's a very good insect repellent, and I highly recommend it for your garden. So you think you have to have a green thumb in order to maintain a garden? Even growing a potted plant? Not true. Just because you've tried a few times and did not see the desired results, that doesn't mean that you should give up. Well, I'm saying this to you. All you have to do is alter your mood in order to have those two conceptual green thumbs. First, go to a place where there are a lot of plants growing, preferably in the wild. Learn to smile when around the plants. They like that. Greet them and caress them without touching them. Caressing a plant is simply slowly framing the outer edge of the plant or the perimeter of the plant with one hand as you greet it or introduce yourself to it. Because plants, they do have a bonding between other plants, and this is communicated in the family of plants. So once you're getting to know plants and introducing yourself to plants, the word spreads, put it that way. Get your first seeds from someone you know and trust and share ideas with. This is a better way of getting your seeds as opposed to purchasing them from a store or a stranger. There's also a carrying energy that is shared when you trade seeds. Start with seeds that are easy to germinate and then grow from there. Some legumes, for example, beans, are easily germinated in a moist tissue or rock wool. Chia seeds are also an easy plant to grow, and they make the perfect way to develop your plant side manner. Plant side manner is like bedside manner. All healers must have a balanced, caring, non-intrusive bedside manner, and so must all gardeners like yourself. And share your ideas and stories in the forum at pharaohshouse.com. Finally, friend or enema is the last topic in my holistic health tips. It's a touchy subject, mainly because enemas bring to mind complicated bowel cleansing. Because of these fear factors, remember, fear can also hurt you because it's something that is unpleasant and parasites like fear. Enemas must be performed correctly and with care. To cleanse the intestinal tract initially before and during and after fasting is one reason for an enema. You can use herbs and you can use aloes when using your enema. Using, of course, clean filtered water that has a temperature around the same as your body temperature. An enema can start to help the process of removing residue, opportunistic microorganisms, and digested waste materials from your intestinal tract. It helps invigorate the villi and helpful flora that both your immune system and digestive system need. Remember that after an enema, it is important to rest. Do not eat cooked foods. Have tea and rest. Drink water. The following day, have clean, fresh fruits and uncooked leafy green vegetables. Subscribe to my info letter for more instructions on how and when to use herbal enemas for optimum health. Before I conclude this particular podisode, thank you to all of those who contributed generously to my Holistic Living Center campaign. That campaign was held on the website indiegogo.com, and it is now over as of April 18th. But you can still contribute to the campaign because it is ongoing. Yes, I am still continuing with the effort to have this dream fulfilled. And you can help. Just go to the website, click on Inner Chamber, and go to the blog article section. On the right sidebar of the page, you'll see a tribute button or a contribute button. You can donate there as much as you can and continue to help build the Holistic Living Center and keep the campaign going until the goal is met. I totally appreciate you all. For your generosity and for your listening, I appreciate you. The advice and information provided in this podisode and on the website are for educational purposes only and not meant as medical or legal advice. Always consult with your primary healthcare provider before incorporating any alternative healthcare or health-centered endeavor. Specified ideas, website photography, and advice are the sole property of Faro and Farrowshouse.com. All music and third-party audio clip copyrights revert to their original owners. Opinions and views expressed in this podisode are mine alone and not necessarily those of any syndicating broadcaster, donor sponsor, or website. Visit farrowshouse.com online to consult privately with me on matters of the spirit or for counseling from an original holistic path. And that is all for today.
Spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. And spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. And wasting most of their time glorifying days long gone behind. And wasting most of their days in remembrance of ignorance so disgraced. Tell me who are them. Dispensation, isolation, exploitation, mutilation, mutation, miscreation, confirmation to the evils of the world. And spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. And spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. They've been looking in their minds for the day that sorrow's lost from time. They keep telling of the day when the Savior of love will come to stay. Tell me who of them will come to be. How many of them are you and me? Proclamation, a grace relation, consolation, integration, verification of revelation, acclamation, world salvation, vibration, stimulation, confirmation to peace of the world. They've been spending most of their lives living in the pastime paradise. They've been spending most of their